today, fooled. Markets claw through self-deception to uncertain highs. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, and we cover commodities and crypto along the way. Things are, well, complicated, following a busy week of US corporate results, with investors concerned about the strength of the artificial intelligence trade and about how aggressively the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates. The data vacuum, because of the government shutdown, continues to add complexity, as does the China-US trade truce, which forced the US to cut some tariffs in return for rare earths for now. Another taco? Following the October monetary policy meeting, Federal Chair Jerome Powell said an interest rate cut at the next meeting in December was not a foregone conclusion. Investors expected that move to be almost a done deal, and in remarks that cooled investor hopes for policy easing, Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta President Rafael Bostic said that a December rate cut was not locked in, despite market expectations for a cut. And Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland President Beth Hammock said she deposed Wednesday's rate cut because inflation is too high. The S&P 500 on Friday ended October up 2.3% for the month. That's its sixth straight month of gains, despite wobbling this week, after mega-cap companies posted mixed results. The rally has lifted the S&P 500 forward price-to-earnings multiple above 23, putting the market's valuation around its highest since the dot-com bubble 25 years ago. Hold that thought. Third quarter S&P profits are tracking 13.8% above a year earlier. More than 130 index companies will report in the coming week, and with 44% of the S&P 500 companies that reported as of Wednesday, 83% exceeded earnings expectations. The S&P 500, the Nasdaq Composite, and the Dow boasted weekly gains in their longest monthly winning streak in years. Yet, while enthusiasm at AI helped drive the S&P 500 up 90% since the bull market began just over 3 years ago, investors are wary of potential over-exuberance tied to the theme and eager for evidence that AI investments are paying off. The rest of the market, as shown in the equal weights view of the market, tells, well, a rather different story. Small caps are more vulnerable to financing costs, and they were down 2.4% in a week, and even hit the even weight S&P 500 down 2.1% in a week compared to the flat market weight S&P 500. With PEs high, the discount rate valuation elements that are derived from the US Treasury's risk-free rate are more influential than usual. Financing costs don't affect big tech that much with their massive free cash flow, but lower rates will support their higher valuations. The US shutdown, which started on October 1, is now the second longest ever, behind the 2018-2019 shutdown that lasted 35 days. Monthly jobs data scheduled for release on November the 7th is set to be delayed, so investors gauging the economy's health will have to rely on alternative data, including the ADP employment report and the University of Michigan consumer sentiment reading. The MSCI's gauge of stocks across the globe inched up just a little to 1,006 for a seventh straight monthly climb. That's the longest run since August 2021. And the pan-European Stock 600 closed down 0.51% after a round of mixed quarterly earnings and a benign Eurozone inflation report that reinforced the European Central Bank's view that price pressures remain contained. And it notched its fourth straight month of gains. Nevertheless, the ASX 200 in Australia slipped just a little, with 4 out of the 11 sectors in the red. The index notched a 1.7% decline over the week. In the US, there have been hiccups. On Thursday, shares at Meta Platforms and Microsoft slid following their quarterly reports. Both announced spending increases to fuel AI expansion. Amazon shares rallied sharply, though, closing up 9.6% after hitting an all-time high following its forecast for quarterly sales above estimates, easing fears that it was falling behind the AI race. Growth at its Amazon Web Services cloud division, which has become largely tied to its ambitions in the nascent technology, came in up 20%. That's the fastest increase since 2022. The online retailer and cloud services giant helped the consumer discretionary sector close up 4% for its biggest one-day gain since May the 12th. Yet Amazon said that it would cut 14,000 corporate jobs just days before it posted that strongest growth in nearly 3 years. Alphabet also boosted its projected capital spending, but its shares rose as investors were more accepting of the Google parent's ability to fund its plans from its own cash flow. Elsewhere in megacap companies, Apple shares closed down 0.4% after its forecast for iPhone holiday quarter sales surpassed Wall Street expectations, but it was clouded by CEO Tim Cook's flagging of supply constraints. Some grocery stocks traded low on Friday on worries about a dip in November sales if federal food aid benefits, known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, lapsed in the ongoing government shutdown. But two federal judges ruled on Friday that President Donald Trump's administration cannot suspend food aid for millions of Americans during the shutdown, saying the government must use contingency funds to pay for the benefits. But shares of grocer Kroger ended down 2.8%, while food supplier Kongara Brands lost 1.3%, and Walmart ended down 1%, even after the rulings. Elsewhere, Netflix announced a 10-for-1 stock split, while ExxonMobil reported a year-on-year fall in third-quarter earnings as oil prices tumbled, due in large part to OPEC Plus increasing production. Chevron, by contrast, posted third-quarter profits, which topped estimates, thanks in part to a boost from oil production linked to an acquisition of Hess earlier in the year. Elsewhere, US President Donald Trump said that he had an amazing, outstanding meeting with China's Xi on Thursday, but offered little clear insights about how Washington and Beijing will temper their trade ties. The president said that he saw a trade deal with China as pretty soon and that there were few stumbling blocks between the two, but he did not specify when the deal would be signed, but then said he would visit China in April. On October the 30th, the Federal Reserve reduced rates by 25 basis points while signalling a data-dependent approach ahead. Chair Jerome Powell's cautious tone sparked a rebound in US 10-year Treasury yields to 4.1%, up more than 30 basis points week over week. But interest rates have been since then modestly lower, down at 4.079%, and the two-year is down to 3.58%. The higher rate has raised the US dollar index above 99.5. Dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, rose 0.31%. And the euro was down 0.31% at 1.1526. The greenback actually saw a second straight weekly gain and a monthly climb of about 2%. The Japanese yen edged slightly higher against the greenback to 154.01 per dollar. The Japanese finance minister said the government has been monitoring foreign exchange movements with a high sense of urgency after the yen plunged to around 154 per US dollar. On the commodity front, gold futures were at $4,013 an ounce, while silver was at $48.37. The one-year trade truce between Washington and Beijing, announced the same day as the Fed meeting, momentarily eased risk aversion across markets. President Donald Trump and President Xi agreed to halt new tariffs and cooperate on supply chain stability, rare earth exports, and agricultural trade. Yet, the deal failed to resolve deeper structural disputes in technology and defense sectors. Asian equities rallied modestly, while industrial metals climbed as growth sentiment improved. However, gold's resilience above the $3,950 to $4,000 level shows that investors still see unresolved geopolitical risks. Analysts note that the fear premium has faded, but not dissipated, particularly with both governments hinting that sanctions and export restrictions could return in 2026 if talks stall. But retail investors seem to have backed off a bit for now. Oil prices fell initially on Friday before grinding higher, but this is still a third consecutive losing month as a stronger dollar and likely rising supply from major producers weighed. Brent futures was up 0.5% to $64.68, and US West Texas Intermediate crude gained 0.5% to $60.90 a barrel. Rising supply is expected to exceed demand growth this year, with the OPEC and major non-OPEC producers ramping up output to gain market share. More supply will also cushion the impact of Western sanctions disrupting Russian oil exports to its top buyers, China and India, although compliance with the latest US sanctions on Russian crude exports is expected to vary across the major buyers. India, which accounts for 34% of Russian crude exports, is likely to comply more fully with the US measures. Now here, I want to pause to delve into a couple of important contextual points on the 96th anniversary of the 1929 crash and the role of the Fed. In their 1962 book, A Monetary History of the United States, Milton Friedman and Anna Schwartz argued that US monetary supply plummeted by a third between 2029 and 1933, creating a great contraction, leading directly to widespread bank failures. This misguided Fed policy led to deflation, increased debt burdens, and reduced economic activity, turning a market correction into a depression. Regarding the Great Depression, you're right. We did it. We're very sorry. But thanks to you, we won't do it again, Ben Bernanke said in a tribute to Milton Friedman on his 90th birthday in 2002. Incidentally, Milton Friedman once suggested that the Fed could be replaced with a computer program that maintains a predictable amount of money, steady and reliable. Today, could that be done by AI? Well, perhaps it's worth a try because central banks seem to be part of the problem. Liquidity pressures do appear to be rising currently, and this is definitely one to watch because, of course, liquidity is coming from all sides, including the US Treasury at the moment. The second point to consider is the sustainability of the massive investments in AI-related infrastructure, as AI has cemented itself as the single biggest catalyst for global corporate investment and the engine of the market rally, even as some question the stability of both. Interestingly, more than 100 non-tech global companies noted that data centers were on their agenda in quarterly calls this week, including Honeywell, turbine maker GE Vernova, and heavy equipment maker Caterpillar. Sales at Caterpillar's division that supplies data centers jumped 31% in its most recent quarter. We're definitely really excited about the prime power opportunity with data centers, CEO Joseph Creed said this week. Goldman Sachs estimates global AI-related infrastructure spending could reach $3 trillion to $4 trillion by 2030. Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, and Alphabet are expected to spend roughly $350 billion. Combined this year, AI investment is propping up global trade, therefore, with around 60% of US data center capex spent on imported IT equipment. That's according to Oxford Economics. Much of its semiconductors are from Taiwan, South Korea, and Vietnam. Since ChatGPT's debut in 2022, global equity values have climbed 46%, or $46 trillion. One third of that has come from AI-linked companies, according to Bespoke Investment Group. But this begs two questions. First, how is the investment funded? And second, how quickly will said investments become obsolete? Well, analysts warn of a quickening replacement cycle for servers, accelerators, and chips as each new generation delivers exponential performance gains. The useful life of AI chips is shrinking to 5 years or even less, forcing companies to write down assets faster and replace them sooner. So the surge in AI-related spending has widened the gap between investment and returns, with analysts showing that sales to capex ratios at major tech firms have fallen sharply as outlays on chips and data centers grow faster than revenue. Capital expenditures represent a large chunk of cash generation by operating activities for some companies, causing some investor concern. Microsoft reported a record $35 billion in CapEx in its most recent quarter and projected higher spending, prompting Bernstein analyst Mark Moeller to ask whether the company was spending into a bubble. The Microsoft chief financial officer responded that AI-related demand was still outpacing Microsoft spending. I thought, we're going to catch up. We are not, she said. Some companies, though, are financing AI projects with debt. Oracle's $18 billion bond sale last month was one of the largest ever for a tech company, and it looks set to be surpassed by an up to $300 billion bond sale from Meta Platforms. News of its largest ever bond sale knocked Meta's shares down 11% on Thursday. And of course, we are seeing this merry-go-round where a lot of money is flowing back into the AI companies who in turn are investing big, who are in turn supporting big investment. So it does smell a bit like a Ponzi to me. Still, some economists say the AI cycle is far from exhausted. Goldman estimates AI investments is currently less than 1% of US GDP, far below peaks of 2 to 5% seen during the electricity and dot-com booms. Others, though, are talking bubbles and parallels the dot-com bust. But this, of course, is all a quantum bigger, and the risks are therefore higher. And remember, bubbles are rarely seen on the way up. And by the way, demand for power and water assets is the other sleeper here. Over in Europe, European stocks slipped low on Friday, ending a busy week on a negative note as investors digested corporate earnings and major interest rate decisions ahead of the key inflation releases that came later. The DAX index in Germany declined 0.7%, the FTSE in the UK dropped, and the CAC 40 in France closed 0.4% lower. The European Central Bank decided to keep its key interest rate, its deposit facility rate, steady at 2% on Thursday for the third consecutive meeting, indicating the policy was in a good place as economic risks receded and as the Eurozone showed continued resilience in the face of uncertainty. Barclays has now revised its forecast for the ECB's rate trajectory, expecting to keep interest rates steady in its December meeting from its earlier view of a quarter point cut. And they expect the central bank to hold the interest rate steady through to the end of 2026. The Eurozone Consumer Price Index came in at 2.1% on the year in October, a small reduction from 2.2% the prior month, indicating inflation remains under control in the region. Yet, data also showed that French consumer prices rose slightly less than expected in October, with the country's harmonised inflation rate adjusted for comparison with the other Eurozone countries just 0.9% year-on-year in October. Bond yields in Germany and even crisis-hit France saw their biggest monthly fall since April, when UF trade tariffs bolstered safe haven debt. Danske Bank said it expected its full-year 2025 net profit to be at the upper end of its target range, even after reporting a 5% fall in profit for the first 9 months of the year, with the Danish lender citing higher loan impairment charges and lower income from its insurance businesses. British stocks finished low on Friday, with the FTSE again down, as markets cooled after a record run earlier in the month. Investors were also cautious ahead of the Bank of England's monetary policy decision next month and the government's budget later in November. The FTSE 100 and the domestically focused FTSE 250 ended 0.44% and 0.47% lower, respectively. Still, both indices were on track for monthly gains, with the FTSE 100 touching record highs multiple times in October and the mid-cap index trading close to four-year highs. UK government bonds, or gilts, battered earlier this year by fiscal concerns, have led the way. 10 and 30-year borrowing costs have fallen around 30 basis points each for their biggest monthly drop since late 2023, as their prices jumped. So October's move does suggest pressures is abating, which is a relief for Britain as a key budget looms, with the talk of tax hikes still back on the table. On the data front, lender Nationwide said that British house prices rose in October, adding to signs of demand in the housing market in the run-up to Finance Minister Rachel Reeves's budget, which is likely to include tax increases for all. In company news, Auto Trader's shares dipped 3.4% after the automotive platform announced its operating chief will step down. Asian stocks were mixed on Friday, with Japan and South Korea extending record rallies on tech sector gains, while Chinese shares fell after weak factory activity underscored ongoing economic headwinds. Market participants also assessed Tokyo's consumer inflation and factory output readings a day after the Bank of Japan held rates steady. Japan's Nikkei 225 jumped as much as 2.1% to hit a fresh record high, while the broader topics gained 0.4%. Gains were buoyed by semiconductor and AI-related shares, tracking futures tied to US tech stocks. The benchmark index has risen by more than 15% this month. But Tokyo's core consumer price index rose 2.8% in October from a year earlier, exceeding expectations and highlighting persistent inflationary pressures. Factory output in September rose 2.2% from the previous month, beating forecasts, while retail sales climbed a modest 0.5% year-on-year, signalling fragile domestic demand. The stronger-than-expected inflation data may keep the Bank of Japan under pressure to tighten monetary policy sooner than anticipated. The policymakers have stressed that wage growth must remain robust to justify further rate hikes. In Seoul, the Kospi added 0.7%, trading just below record highs touched in the previous session, powered by heavyweight chip makers such as Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix. The Kospi's jumped 20% in October, powered by AI. India's Nifty 50 edged down once again to around 25,722. And China's blue chip Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 dropped 1%, while the Shanghai Composite declined 0.7% and Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell 0.6%. Official data on Friday showed Chinese manufacturing activity contracted for a seventh consecutive month, while the Services Purchasing Manager Index, the PMI, edged up only slightly. Data reinforced concerns over China's sluggish recovery and fueled speculation that Beijing may soon announce additional support measures. In addition, upbeat global headlines clashed with China's own economic jitters, a stark contrast to Japan and Korea's record-setting rallies. While the index is still up a robust 20.9% over the past year, recent data and news suggests a market caught between external optimism and internal caution. While US President Donald Trump described their talks as amazing and both parties discussed trade tariffs and technology exports, there were few concrete commitments, leaving markets hesitant to price in a clear breakthrough. The Australian share market was flat on Friday after declines in the consumer discretionary sector offset sharp gains in gold miners after the precious metal rallied following a run of declines in the commodity price. The ASX 200 slipped less than 0.1% to 8,881.9 at the closing bell, with 4 out of 11 sectors in the red. The index notched a 1.7% decline over the week. Consumer discretionary stocks were the worst performers, led by JB Hi-Fi falling 3.4% to $104.72, whereas Farmers lost 2.5% to $84, and the Lottery Corporation declined 1.1% to $5.50. Earlier in the session, gains in the materials sector pushed the index higher. The rally in miners tracked a 2.5% rally in bullion after it fell 5% over the previous four sessions. Gold producers were among the best performers on the ASX 200. Westgold added 6%, Newmont 3.5%, Bellevue Gold 3.5%, and Evolution Mining 4.2%. But there were mixed results across the banks, with index heavyweight Commonwealth Bank up 0.7% to $171.64, but ANZ shares dropped 0.6% to $36.65 after it flagged a $1.1 billion profit hit from the restructuring of thousands of staff and penalties imposed by the corporate regulator ahead of reporting its earnings for the financial year. On the ASX, sleep device maker ResMed rallied 1.7% to $13.53 after it reported a 9% increase in first quarter earnings to $1.3 billion, as it announced plans to expand its manufacturing operations in the US. Mayne Pharma tanked 31.5% to $4.25 after it announced that Treasurer Jim Chalmers had indicated that he would reject US pharmaceutical giant Cosette's $672 million takeover bid for the company. Steadfast plunged 9.7% to $5.60 after its chief executive Robert Kelly opted to stand aside pending an investigation into allegations made against him by an employee. And Origin Energy lost 2.8% to $1.25 when it posted flat gas production volumes from its Australia Pacific LNG venture in Queensland for the December quarter. It also said gas sale volumes in the retail arm declined 12% compared with the year earlier. And commercial and consumer finance group Humm tumbled 9% to 60 cents after it reported a 14% slump in quarterly loan originations, dragged lower by technology issues and tighter credit approvals for its new buy now, pay later product. Now, something to note about the Australian market is that the ASX has been pushed higher by the combination of fiscal and monetary stimulus unleashed in the wake of the pandemic. Unlike most global markets, the accelerating shift from active management to passive strategies has been a defining trend of the rally. But Australia's capital market has been hit by a second unique trend, huge and increasing government-mandated flows into super funds, a proportion of which has naturally found its way to the ASX. The biggest companies in the main ASX indices have been the biggest winners, but all companies in the S&P have enjoyed a level of buying. The passive funds must track the index, and the super funds must do similar to pass the performance tests. This lifts all boats, whether they are well managed or not, and that's a problem. Add to that recent government statements to direct more of the $4 trillion of super funds into US investments or Australian housing and infrastructure, and you begin to see the problem. We have extra government thumbs on the market scales. Finally, in crypto, Bitcoin held steady near 110,160 after a rollercoaster October, just weeks after it hit its all-time high of 106,267 on the 6th of October. Recent news and macro shifts have delivered both optimism and caution in crypto markets over the period. On the 27th of October, Bitcoin broke above its October trading range of 100,000 to 110, surging 1.2% to 114,880. But that rally was driven by news of the US-China trade breakthrough and soft US inflation data, fueling hopes for Federal Reserve rate cut later that week. Sound the charters analyst Jeffrey Kendrick even suggested Bitcoin may never go below 100K again. If positive momentum holds, citing macro tailwinds and thawing geopolitical tensions, but others are more sanguine. Despite the late month rally, Bitcoin cooled off from its record high, and current price is 110,410, down 7% from the past month and 2.7% over 3 months, but still boasting a robust 58.7% gain over the past year. But volatility remains elevated, and looking at the 30-day realized, it suggests that sharp moves are still on the table. That said, Bitcoin's market cap dominance stands at 59.26%, underscoring its continued leadership, even as altcoins lag behind. And elsewhere, MicroStrategy reported $3.9 billion in unrealized gains from its Bitcoin holdings in the third quarter 2025, with management reaffirming their bullish outlook and plans to expand capital market activity. An American Bitcoin Corp continues to accumulate, now holding 3,865 Bitcoins as at the 24th of October, reflecting aggressive corporate interest in Bitcoin as a treasury asset, at least for some. Both stocks were down, though, again signalling uncertainty. And that really is the tenor that we should take away from this past week. There are peaks of excitement and peaks of news, but also great uncertainty. And I still think that the markets are in for a wobbly ride ahead, despite the fact, of course, that most people are now saying, oh, well, we always go up towards the end of the year, so expect highs ahead. I guess we will see. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.